Welcome back to the Rooksell Podcast. As always, Farouk Bello, host of the podcast. This is a second part to the conversation I had with Jodine. I released them separately, and it's basically a continuation of a question I asked Jodine in the first part, which is how do we deal with trauma? And we're talking about individualized responses to trauma and traumatic events. And this can be either in the form of injuries or non-injury related emotional, psychological trauma. So go listen to the first part, come back, listen to this one. Or not, it's your choice. But I give you again, Jodine Williams. Right. What are your thoughts, Jodine?
Yeah, so I think it was very important what you said initially, that we are all individualized, and the way we will experience trauma is very different depending on the person and the traumatic event. That being said, we can see people shut down. We can see them look for other routes to kind of manage that trauma. This can look like substance misuse. This can look like smoking, alcohol, gambling. It can also look like extreme emotions, so not being able to understand your emotions, but displaying a range of them, going through, you know, that might be tears, that might be anger, that might be abuse to others. So I think dealing with a traumatic event can be very varied. So it depends on the event. What we see in athletes, especially when it comes to injury, we can see that sometimes, depending on the injury, it can also impact others, depending on. So, for example, the footballer that was on the pitch that passed out. I'm very bad with names. Please remind me of the name.
Christian Eriksen. That was a heart attack.
Christian Eriksen. Yes, a heart attack. So. And there was a few other heart attacks in football previously. If you look at that traumatic event, that didn't just impact him. That would have impacted the whole team. So sometimes that traumatic event can spread out. But for him, if you look at that, it's what has happened. Sometimes you have a bit of denial. You might not accept the event. You might go through spirals of different emotions. You might become withdrawn from the people around you. And I know you asked prior, what can people do? I think we first need a period to really experience our emotions through that traumatic event. And I think that's something that sometimes people don't do. So, for example, I was watching Last Chance You on Netflix. I do love a sports documentary, and it's about basketball. And it follows the young. It might not be a true reflection, but it follows the young men through their experiences. And one young man came on and talked about him losing his mother and how he never really grieved through it. And you could see him well up with tears on the screen. And his coach talked about how he started training. So you can tell that during that experience, he hadn't dealt with that traumatic event. His mum was his only person that he clung to. And he had used basketball as an escapism rather than dealing with that emotions. And what his colleagues about in relation to him, his teammates, was that you could see a shift in him. You could see a change in him. And that was because he had an experience. He'd experienced that trauma. And instead of dealing with it, what he'd do is closed off, and he closed off the emotions to it. And I've seen it in my clients themselves. They're for a traumatic experience, and instead of dealing with it and managing it, they close themselves off and tell themselves it's not okay to deal with emotions. So I would say that initial understanding and that initial period of, in a sense, grief or coming to an understanding of what has happened, why it has happened, and the emotions that surround it, which can be difficult, and it's okay to cry. I know it depends on who you are, because not everyone's a crier, yeah. But it's okay to cry. It's okay to express that. Looking at your support systems as well. Who can you talk to? Who can help you and support you overcome this? That might be a friend. You might just want to offload it to someone and talk about how that's impacted you. But also coping strategies, depending on how you've experienced. So unhealthy or negative coping strategies, such as substance misuse, aren't what we want people to go down. So we want them to look at coping strategies that are positive for them, whether that be, you know, one of my big favorites that I'm liking at the moment is forest bathing, going out and meditating in the forest, you know, getting the restorative benefits of being in the green and in the environment. It might be going for a walk, it might be reading, painting, drawing. Maybe you can't run at the moment. Is it cycling? Is it something different that you're able to do to cope and manage that trauma at this time? But I think what makes traumatic events difficult is we don't deal or manage our emotions well, because we might not know how we're going to experience them and when we're going to experience them. And as human beings, I'm not sure we don't have a box of healthy coping strategies that we can pull out when we're not feeling down. What happens is we go through life and then something impacts us, and then we start to look for positive coping strategies that can support us through that time. But we should start to build them even when we're in a good space. What do I like doing? What will center me? What will help me deal with or manage this space and this event that I'm experiencing? And then looking at what's next and, you know, how can I push forward and be the best version of me?
I think that's an interesting thing, you know, the concept of, you know, not waiting till you are down per se to find these mechanisms that you can potentially use. But one thing I found interesting you said was, you know, the idea of escapism. Now, I play basketball and play a lot of basketball. You know, I don't play as much because I've now become a physiotherapist, so I can't play as much as I used to in university. But for me, you know, basketball, gym, these were forms of means of escaping in terms of when I just wanted to, you know, I knew that when I'm playing, I didn't have to think about anything else. You know, when I was in the gym, I didn't have to worry about anything else. I'd just be working out, either one or the two. And you mentioned that, you know, people sometimes, is escapism a bad thing in terms of, you know, because sometimes when you experience these traumatic events or something that is catastrophic, some people will just, you know, flock to what they know and say, this is the method that I want to use. Now, I can imagine it can be used as a, just based on what you said, where, you know, sometimes you use that as a good coping strategy, but sometimes you use that as an avoidance in terms of you don't want to go through what you don't want to deal with stuff now. So block yourself up, lock yourself into one aspect. Is that a fair, you know, analysis to say where, you know, it can be either, but, you know, you need to find that balance where you're still using it as a positive, but you're not using it as a complete substitute of dealing with, you know, the issues at hand, the traumatic mental event or family emotional. Is that fair to say?
Fair to say. And I think just to be very clear on that, it's not to say that sports and exercise is bad at all, but if we are using it to cover something else rather than dealing with that, sooner or later, the thing that we're dealing with will surface. So for example, what we see is, with people that are, say, recreational runners, and they use running as their coping mechanism. If you only have that one coping mechanism and then they become injured and they're not able to do that, they then struggle to cope. And that's because we haven't built up enough coping strategies so that it's okay, I might not be able to run today. What else could I do? I might not be able to cycle. What else could I do to help me cope and help me manage? So if you are using sport as an escape for something else, it's similar to, you know, alcohol as an escape. Yeah. It's very similar. So it will be at that detriment. So for example, for me, running was my safe space. It's how I managed. It was how I, you know, it was what kept me balanced. And when I became injured and I couldn't run, that's why I was, in a sense, disheveled. So that's why it impacted me so much, because I wasn't able to do what I knew. I go on the track, I manage my emotions on the track. I don't have to deal with anything else. But then when that's taken away, how else do I cope? I don't know any other way to cope. So that's why I say we need to really bolster that and pack ourselves with many tools that we can implement when we're faced with trauma, we're faced with grief, or we're faced with something that we need to cope with. We can't, if we only have one and that one's taken away from us, how will we face any other aspects of life?
Now, you mentioned the things you mentioned now are, you know, for me right now in the phase I'm in, they're almost personal in terms of they're really hitting home. in terms that, you know,
yeah, right now, sorry.
No, it's a good thing. It's giving me very reflective, and I like to reflect. And especially, it's one of the reasons why I love having people on my podcast, especially people like yourself. You know, it gives me that opportunity to reflect on things that, like, as you know, I'm currently in a recovery phase where I'm not able to physically play basketball. I'm not able to even go to the gym. So these for me were my bread and butter of, you know, when I want to, you know, I have to come back from work, go gym basketball, one of the two, or hit the run. Exercise was my tool. And, you know, other things I have, such as podcasting, editing, things like this. Well, those were my bread and butter. Now I physically can't do them. And, you know, it's a toll on me because I'm thinking, you know, I haven't built that box, as you said, of other stuff, things you can, that you can potentially be looking at doing. So when one is taken from you, you don't, as you said, where to use this distraught, or you're not in a place where you have the options. And it's very interesting thinking that. And I think most of the times, you know this because this is your line of work particularly. I don't know if I should know this particular, but now I do at the very least. But, you know, we will only be faced with these questions when, you know, faced with these, you know, almost, you know, philosophical, the psychological, you know, dilemmas when you are put in a position where you have to deal with them.
To need them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, I would say has its pros and has its cons. The cons in terms of you don't want to always in any situation, physiotherapy, physical therapy, you don't want to get to the point where, you know, you're injured before you start to realize maybe next time I should do what I need to do not to get injured. You know, you don't want, it's like prehab, for example. Mm-hmm. We go through prehab where it's getting you prepared so to try and you can't, because you will never, you know, you'll never take your chances of getting injury to zero. The only way you can take your chance of getting injured to zero or any form of, you know, injury or trauma is by doing absolutely nothing, and which is almost impossible. You know what I mean? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's very,
I can hear you.
Yeah, good. So right now I'm in a situation where I can't do basketball. So now it's forcing me to think of other things I will be doing to keep my mind occupied and keep these type of things. But to everyone else, you know, if anyone's listened to the podcast, the five people who do listen to the podcast at times, is that, you know, as you said, building that box is very, very interesting. Now, you know, how would you go about, I mean, obviously you have some personal experience in this game as well as both professional, you know, what were mechanisms or what did you use when you came to this realization? Because I imagine you came to it both personally and then professionally, you did say you saw, so this is what was happening with me before, which is a lot of the things, you know, see me as a physio now. When I was getting injured, spraining my ankle multiple times before, I was always like, why am I always spraining my ankles? I sprained my left and my right ankle. God knows, like 3 times in 2 years or 4 times, 2 years. When I need to ask myself, why do I, now I know it was chronic ankle because I wasn't doing the work after it was repaired. That's why it kept on happening to myself. Now, obviously you seem to come to a similar realization, but from a mental standpoint, what were you able to do to break that barrier or to then improve so that, you know, because you never know when something traumatic will happen to you. That's what it's called. It's traumatic. If you could prepare for it, you know, it wouldn't be more very traumatic. It would be preordained in a sense. So what are you able to do? Or what would you recommend people to do going forward, you know, to give themselves those tools they need to deal with things well going forward?
From my own experience, it was very, I found out very late that, you know, running was my coping strategy. But I looked for other things that I was really interested in, other things that I could do. So off the cuff, I made jewelry at one point. I now do photography. I'm very creative, so I can pay with outlet. So anything creative, I will dive myself into, whether that be pottery, whether that, you know, story writing, whatever interests me at the time. So I can do that and I will enjoy it. I am a lover of things. I like to do things. So that is good for me. I picked up another sport, which obviously is counterintuitive. But I think it's finding things that you like and that you're good at. What are you good at? What is going to calm you? What's going to relax you? I like reading. I like listening to podcasts. So I could read for 2-3 hours and I'd be happy to read and digest. And, you know, that would relax me. That would get me in a reflective process. Journaling is very good. Mindfulness, coloring, because it takes you away from that traumatic event, brings you into the present, which is embracing those colors, coloring on the, you know, they have adult coloring books at this point in time. So you can do that. So I think the first point of call is, what do you like to do and what impacts you positively? And looking at things that you can do that you will be good at. So there are loads of things out there that you can do. So, for example, if you can't run, could you do Tai Chi, for example? Really slow movement.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of free classes. Is that something that you could do instead? What can you do to supplement that? So it might be, you know, in the mornings, I'm going to do X, Y, Z. But if I'm not able to do X, there's always A that I can do to help set off my day to a good standard. But I think what happens is, as human beings, we get into these routines, and once something from our routine is thrown off, we're, as I said, disheveled. We're disheveled, and we don't have anything else to go to. And it's similar to going to a sports psychologist. We think, go to a sports psychologist when something is wrong, rather than, I want to build up some of my mental capacity before something gets wrong. And it's similar to coping strategies. Build up those coping strategies before you need them. So when you need them, you can just dip into your box of tools, in a sense, and utilize those whenever you need them.
No, I think that's actually, you know, very, very, very timely, you know, things to say at the moment now. It's, you know, it's finding those things, you know, it's, and sometimes I think people are scared to try new things. And the only way you find out if you don't like something new is if you try it. You say, don't like it. I found many things in this life that I've interested in, and there's so many things I want to try more. You know, given the opportunity, I will do them. Let me figure out if I don't like them or not after I do them. But you can't make predeterministic thinking, I'm not going to like that. And that's a very interesting thing. And I think one thing you said was, you know, going to sports psychologist, you know, beforehand. And a very close friend of mine was telling me, you know, that sometimes, you know, she talked to a psychologist, but it's not just because when you're always down, you have to, you know, when something happens, you need to see a psychologist. Sometimes you just see when you're good to keep you up in there. Similar things with, you know, you don't always have to see a physio or any medical person when you're at your worst. Sometimes when you're okay, just to see how things are going, how to keep things going good, and keep that energy up. You know, if, for example, you know, most, we're conditioned to only seeing people, doctors, for example, is see a doctor when you're, something is wrong. You know, obviously, you'll be counterintuitive. Not many people think, when things are going right, let me go see my doctor. But when things are okay, you can say, how can, and it's part of, you know, the way we talk about preventative medicine, preventative techniques, lifestyle things to basically keep you up. And I think the logic is, and I'm sure there's evidence behind it, I don't know it off the top of my head, where, you know, keeping yourself, you know, at tip-top shape, I know there's definitely evidence for that, will help you prevent, you know, the ability for your occurrences of you going to need, you know, for example, see your GP or your doctor or your psychologist or physio, you know, basically prevent it. That's why athletes, you know, they don't get, elite athletes aren't getting injured every, you know, for basic things. They get injured when they, for significant injuries that you know, cannot prevent. Whereas your daily recreational person who, you know, for life choice is not going to have, be able to get those imputes, will get injured for something that, you know, maybe may not be getting injured. And I see this as a physio where, you know, in these simple hamstring injuries, different types of injuries. And I think that comes back into the mental aspect, because I think at certain levels, they get regular mental coaching. Am I correct? You know, at different stages, you know, depending on the level of athlete you are, or the person, you can get, they get that mental impute, or they have chat with the likes of yourself. But do you see that? Is that a fair theme, or are you only seeing people, you personally, when they're at their worst?
I am. I'll be honest with you. I'm seeing people when they're at their worst. So, and I think it's good because, for example, Tottenham just employed a basic performance psychologist. They're looking for someone to manage that. So I think teams are seeing that it is important, but it needs to be important at every level. And people are coming before something is wrong. People are coming when something is wrong rather than before. I have had a few athletes here and there who will just come in, you know, to build some coping strategies for X, Y, Z. But usually I get people at their worst, and that's when they need to change. And also that is when it's more difficult, because you have so much more to unpack, so much more to manage, so much more to deal with. And it is a harder journey. It's more taxing as well emotionally for the athletes. So it would be better if it was a constant. For example, sports psychologists, performance psychologists worked in an organization where they currently always did workshops. So people will always come and do a mental check-in. How are things going? What are your coping strategies looking like? What's your mental strategies looking like? So that they are always robust. Yeah. If something traumatic happens, then we manage that. But at least we're constantly building that resilience, building those positive coping strategies and those positive mindsets before anything happens.
No, I think that's a good one. The same way, you know, the way they say go to your dentist twice a year, you should see a dentist.
Yeah.
We should start pushing those narratives. And it will slowly happen. And these are things that they don't happen in 1 year. They happen over years and years and years for the future future people, which I think would be interesting dynamics. It's very similar. See a dentist twice a year. Maybe they should start saying, see a psychologist twice a year, just to check in how you're doing.
Just a check-in.
Yeah. See your physio twice a year.
We should call it a psychological MOT. Have you had your psychological MOT yet? Just check in once a year, get all the tuning.
Absolutely. Maybe we need to give people the certificate.
TikTok.
Yeah, treat your body the same way as well as you treat your car. But I'm very much appreciative for you coming on, Joe Ding. I think you really, both to the people who are potentially listening as well as most importantly myself, I've definitely learned quite a few things that I'm going to go ahead and reflect on and think about a lot and see how that can implement them in my life. And it's been a very good pleasure to have you on the podcast. Now, before I'm not going to cut you out. Do you have anything to, leave the people with, let them know how they can reach you potentially if they wanted to have a chat with you? I'll put that in the description as well, or how they could reach you as well.
A final thing that I would really like to leave people with is the importance of the mind. I know you hear a lot about it. Mindset is everything, but really understanding yourself as a human, as we navigate this life, but also understanding how you can make your mind better so that you make your life better is really important for me. If you want to have a chat or you just want to check out my posts, I'm on Instagram at mind.advantage. If you would like to send me an email, I am info@mindadvantage.co.uk. And you can find all of my information anyway on my Instagram.
Yeah, brilliant. I'll make sure to put all that in the description as well so that people can check you out. But yeah, much appreciated. Hopefully, we will have another episode with you at some point in the future to see how things are going. And as another checkup for another time, well, many thanks for coming on the podcast, Jodine. It's been a pleasure to have a chat with you for this. Thanks for giving me your time. All right.
Thank you for having me.
Lovely. Hope everyone has a lovely day and take care. I hope you enjoyed the podcast episode, but also make sure to subscribe to the Brooks Health Podcast on YouTube as well as the podcast so you don't miss another episode, but also follow us on social media @Brooks Health. Till the next video on the Brooks Health Podcast.